Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben on a frosty evening here in Seattle, Washington. With me, as always, is Cold Hornaday.
Hey, now.
Nicole Lamb. And, of course, Chris, oh my God, I'm freezing.
I like that one. It's a good one.
You guys.
He workshopped this all the way over here tonight.
Thought about that in the car on the way over, and I'm like, I just hope I remember to bring that up when we start recording.
Oh, well, the brilliance of Ben Lawrence, folks.
Hello,
the brilliance
friends.
Of Ben Lawrence.
I have to say that if somebody across the room says, I'm cold, I go, what?
Yeah.
Because it sounds like Nicole. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we both have suffered that
throughout
our lives, which is why we are
the Cole.
Woo-woo! Right. Yeah, and I, like in school or just in any other awkward social situation, my name sounds like a bunch of other words as well.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, is somebody mentioned me? Or I have actually responded to not my name, like very vocally in a group setting.
Yeah,
so it's kind of weird.
Yep.
All right, so hey, we're here in the beautiful Comics Dungeon in lovely downtown Wallingford, and we're approaching the end of the year. It's about mid-December. Anything coming up at the dungeon that we should know about in the last 2 weeks of the year?
So
we just had our
cat thing.
Cat cosplay event here at the
in the past, which is our future. But we will have our end of the year sale. We always have a big blowout end of the year sale because there's not many new comics the last week of the year. And
the industry wants to take a vacation.
Generally, but now it seems like mostly Marvel just wants to take the vacation because there will be DC comics in the Image and some other things. But it is still a noticeably much smaller shipping list. So we do a big focus on our back issues, and we will have a ginormous back issue blowout sale, and same on toys and some other stuff too. So keep an eye for that. It'll be the last week. Usually it's like, it seeps into January a little bit. It's like Wednesday to Wednesday or something like that.
Yeah, probably the 28th on.
Yeah.
You can keep posted on the Facebook page.
Yep.
We'll be keeping all our events on there. And then we also post our newsletters on the on comicsengine.com, so you can check those too.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. And I wish I could come to the cat cosplay thing. I can't, but I so want to be here
it.
For that.
It was really great.
Yeah. We didn't have to clean anything up.
Oh. Are you going to have like a litter box in the back for emergencies?
We have the photographer. We had the photographer here, and he's been working with the cats for a long time. So I think he had it all down pat. It's really hard to do this past tense, but yeah, I'm trying.
Past future imperfect.
I'm trying.
And it's an old cat that's with us. It's like 12-year-old cat or something like that. So he probably won't be too rambunctious.
She's and as of cute. This episode, that cat's a little older.
Just a little. Yeah.
Just a little
all
bit.
Right. Well, let's talk about a couple of things that happened in the week's news and comics. Let's see. Number one, Black Bolt is getting his first ever solo comic. I hadn't actually never heard of Black Bolt before I saw this article.
Well, that's because everything about Black Bolt is very hush-hush.
Oh, that was a bad joke.
Is that a bad joke?
Bad
all right.
joke.
Cole,
you're welcome. You're all welcome.
There's an article at io9.com, and the...
he's very mum about a lot of it.
Oh, my God. He can't talk because it's, like, you know, vocal weaponry, like Black Canary.
Oh, you were talking about Black... Not Cole, but...
Sometimes also Cole.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Continue.
So it's written by Saladin Ahmed, and I'm probably butchering his name. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But he says... I don't want to say Black Bolt's hipster, or he's a hipster test, but if you know who the Inhumans are, then you're sort of like on the inside. So it kind of tells me that, you know, he's kind of not throwing shade at the Inhumans, but are the Inhumans like the underground heroes of the Marvel universe?
Just,
I question
this. Underappreciated, maybe?
Yeah. Well, but I question his whole take on how he's going to be telling the stories, because the Inhumans have been around since shortly after the inception of the Fantastic Four, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to say, well, you know, you have to be hardcore Marvel zombie to know and appreciate who the Inhumans are. That's That's unfortunate if you believe that, because they've always been around in one capacity or another.
They're just generally not that popular.
Right. Yeah, okay. But now they are, because they're supplanting the X-Men. And, you know, if you follow the conspiracy theorist trail, it's because Fox will not relinquish the X-Men, and the X-Men were you know, their hot seller. And now then you're shaking your head, but...
Yeah, they're coming out with a whole new thing of X-Men next
year. There's a giant relaunch.
Oh, they are? Like,
yeah,
okay,
so
because for a while... All right, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
It was all business decisions, and they're just kind of like, well, we can't, we need to make money where we can. So
well, then here's the mistake they're making, is they're paralleling the X-Men and the Inhumans too closely.
Oh, yeah.
Because
with
now...
the Inhumans versus X-Men.
Right, because now they're between the TV shows and the movies and the comics, the distinction, those things which made the mutants distinct from the Inhumans are getting really, really fuzzy.
Yeah. And, one needs a mist, one some sort of genetic mutation.
Well, and what, and did, what was the new crossover? DNA. Was it the X-Men versus Inhumans,
where... versus X-Men.
Yeah, that's the one that just came out.
Okay, but are not mutants now, like, allergic to the Terrigen Mist?
Some of them are. Yeah. Okay. Some of it is killing them.
Right. So now they want... Now it's, like, full-out war because
of
that.
Yeah. All right.
So do we care that Black Bolt's getting his own title?
Nope.
Not really.
All right.
I am actually looking forward to it.
Okay.
I read that interview, and it sounded like there was some interesting stuff, because it's not... just about being a Marvel zombie, because he also said, like, he's making it so that new readership can learn about him and get into it. And some of the concepts that he's getting into sound like they could be kind of interesting. And I don't have a personal connection to Black Bolt, so I have a little bit maybe fresher eyes to it, too, so to see how, like, it reads.
My concern was, what are you going to bring to this that Mr. Coates has not brought to Black Panther?
Well,
you know,
because
there's some discussion of
loyalty,
of royalty and loyalty.
I find it intriguing because, and I didn't know this, but Mr. Ahmed says that he's a very compelling guy because he can't speak.
Yes. Because basically his slightest whisper can destroy him out in range.
Man, that's why I was making all the bad puns earlier.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
See, my concern is...
I feel so foiled right now.
I'm sure when I edit this episode later, I'll just burst out laughing in my apartment.
Will you just pee yourself a little bit for me? Just a little bit.
My thing is, so it is interesting because, you know, Nicole, you don't have much invested in the characters.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to you. It's like, but I've read... far too many miniseries and failed series, and my favorite being the Paul Jenkins J. Lee run.
Absolutely.
Which was very political thriller, but it also, the tone was a little bit closer to something like Clive Barker's Nightbreed, which is actually a take I like for them. It's like that, it differentiates them from the X-Men. This is like, this is the kind of creepy group of heroes.
Yeah.
Not just the weird, we got powers and we can stand for a bunch of different social things, but this is the kind of group that's like, I don't know how I feel about that right now.
I agree with you. That is like the last Inhuman series of any length that I read. And when was that? The late 90s?
2000.
Yeah, 2000. Now, I've been reading the Karnak series.
Warren Ellis?
And I think that one's actually quite interesting.
If it came out.
If it would come out with any degree of regularity. Yeah. Because it's a fresh, solid take on the character. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, if you weren't the wiser, you wouldn't know that he was part of this other superhero group called the Inhumans.
Right, right. So.
I think it's more the concepts that he's looking to take on. I'm looking to see how those are executed and using Black Bolt as a vessel for that storytelling. More so than, you know, oh, it's just another, like, Inhumans title that's going to probably fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be, but, you know, maybe it is, like, a Vision kind of story, or maybe it is, like, a Black Panther story in that way, where it does something a little off the beaten path that ends up being really intriguing. So that's what has my interest peaked.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. There's no release date in the article. I don't know when it's planning
coming
out.
I think it just said like 2017.
Some cool cover graphics,
nice
though.
Yeah, there's going to be a wave of new Inhumans titles, I think, probably like March-ish to April-ish or something.
So are these new Inhumans titles in tandem with the X-Men titles that are coming?
We don't know yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. We'll have to see what the aftermath of Inhumans versus X-Men is.
Two shall I tell, one will remain.
There will be a Deadpool variant on whichever one.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Wait, do you not like Deadpool?
I have something to get out of bed for in the morning.
As an aside, we didn't actually mention what the Inhumans are. A lot of people are familiar with X-Men. Did anyone want to do a quick synopsis of the Inhumans?
What's the elevator pitch on the Inhumans?
Like, you know, quick.
Who they are or what they are?
Like who they are, a little bit of their history. Where they originate from.
My recollection, I was actually thinking about this today. I thought they were originally genetically bred by the Kree to be super soldiers.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Or like super slaves or something.
Super slaves,
like,
or super soldiers. Yes.
But
they
from
were,
humanity. Like the Kree visited Earth.
From the human stock, right.
Yeah,
and they and they but we don't know if they were supposed to be super soldiers or just super slaves, right?
Both.
Because every one of them there's that X factor thing is the unpredictability of their genesis process for each and every one of them.
Yeah.
And the core group, they're royals.
The royal family.
It's Black Bolt, Medusa,
Karnak,
Gargan. Triton.
Gorgon. Yeah. And Lockjaw.
And
Maximus is the mad brother of Black Bolt.
Yeah. Black Bolt's
And Crystal.
And Crystal.
The way that the Inhuman gene is, or whatever it is activated is through something called the Terrigen Mist.
Mm-hmm.
And now in recent times, especially in Inhumans vs. X-Men, there's been a couple Terrigen Mists that are like floating through areas and they're finding new Inhumans and scooping them up and making them part of the team.
Bopping them on the head.
But one of the more interesting aspects is that sometimes the Terrigen turns you into an alpha primitive,
mm-hmm.
and there's an entire slave culture to the Inhumans, and
mm-hmm.
that's what the Paul Jenkins run really played on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that extra additional, like, oh, this suddenly got much more complicated than just happy mutant time.
So when you originally met them, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, please.
When they're originally introduced in the Fantastic Four, they're living in a secret, their secret retreat in the Himalayas called Atlan.
Then Atlan moved to the moon at some point.
To the blue area of the moon.
And it moved back to Earth, and it went into space, and it went back to the moon, then it went back to Earth.
Wasn't there a part where it was underwater, too?
Yes.
Island, yes.
Atlan just needs to settle down.
Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, is an Inhuman. So there's a connection point there.
Yeah.
The Inhumans actually have a really dark history because it's mostly slavery, and apparently still in present times, there's still some slavery within the Inhumans. So, yeah.
Seems an odd choice. Mm-hmm.
But my favorite Inhuman has always been Lockjaw. But Lockjaw, I think it was the Jenkins series, the J. Lee Jenkins series, where they said, you know, he's not actually a dog. He's just another Inhuman who looks like a dog.
I couldn't actually remember.
That's a really good analogy, fan.
Isn't it kind of creepy that, like, Goofy has a dog? I'm not sure if that was that series, but and I'm not sure if they've retconned that out yet or not,
because
they seem to be forgotten that. But Inhumans. Yeah.
Well, it was never, to my recollection, it was never specified. It was alluded to that he may be, you know, this is his manifestation of his Inhumanness. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Inhumans. Hey, maybe one of these days we'll have a proper Inhuman versus X-Men discussion. But let's move on and let's talk about R.L. Stine of Goosebumps fame.
That's my jam
is going to be writing a Man-Thing title. What do we think about that?
I'm really curious what you think.
I'm super duper curious. Well, it sounds like it's going to be an anthology kind of series where the Man-Thing is the framing. But it can't be an anthology if they're all written by Stine. So
there's
be,
like a backup material in there.
Yeah.
It's like an extra story.
Well, it sounds like there are stories and Man-Thing is the framing device for it.
Well, each issue of Man-Thing will feature a unique bone-chilling horror short written by Mr. Stine. Illustrated by a rotating crew of incomparable artists. We've had discussion before about non-comics writers taking over comic titles, and this is a good example of it, because I actually know who this guy is.
Yeah.
He had Goosebump comics that he got translated graphically, right?
Yeah,
I don't think he scripted them.
No, yeah. Okay. R.L. Stine is my generation, and...
See, what did you like about him when you were reading him when you were a kid?
Because I'm a spooky kid. I just liked that there was some material I could read that was generally pretty creepy.
How old were you when you were reading it?
Probably around 10-ish.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right for me, too.
Because I was reading Man-Thing when I was around 10-ish, so...
Oh, so it could potentially be a decent...
Well, the beef that I've always had with Man-Thing is that... Man-Thing has always failed where Swamp Thing succeeded, and that was no one's ever known, figured out what to do with this character. Cool in concept, cool in execution and look and everything, but no one knows what to do with this guy to put him into a cool story. And that's the burden of the writer. And there have been plenty of writers who knew what to do with Swamp Thing, and not just Alan Moore, but Nancy Collins and Rick Veitch and people like that, I thought, who did an exceptional job of recreating and giving me this character that's a muck monster that I liked and was and I wanted to follow. Man Thing, well, it kind of hurts that character that he's brain dead. You know, he has no personality.
So as
he's
the
mindless.
Framing device yeah. of the book, it's just like, so how's he going to intro this? And the only thing I could think of that I would love, actually, is Man-Thing was in the Thunderbolts for a while.
Yes, mm-hmm. I knew you were going
to. How did that work out? Well, how did that work out? I didn't know about that.
So there's this sequence where... I can't remember he got rebirthed or reborn or somehow, but somebody put an enchantment on him and he could speak, but it's a Galactus. Everybody that listened to him heard him in a different voice.
Oh, cool.
So to one person, he sounded like an ancient, wise creature. Uh-huh. To another one, he sounded kind of like a schmuck. And then one of them, he was like, yo, what's up? And so it was pretty great.
That is great.
I think the villain Boomerang was the one that's just like, he's using slang, guys. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was really well done.
Yeah, so that was pretty fun.
Who was writing the series at that time?
Jeff Parker.
Oh that makes
course.
Total sense.
All right.
Yeah. Well, but that Luke Cage was in charge. And they needed a Man Thing, and they were like, here's a Man Thing.
Did they qualify it so that like they ratcheted up his intellect in any way?
They basically kind of had him sort of...
Because he's always been a walking rock. He has no brains. He's just a
walking plant.
Walking plant. He's an empath.
An elemental aspect similar to the Alan Moore Swamp Thing stuff. But so he was kind of force of nature that just kind of was operating on some level.
Okay.
Because he had so many voices throughout the series, it wasn't like he had one decisive style of personality.
That's actually a really fascinating way of dealing with that character.
It was a lot of fun because the main reason he was around was this is after Civil War. Mm-hmm. I think during like the Golden Age of stuff, whatever, or the heroic age or whatever. And Luke Cage was put in charge of the Thunderbolts.
You mean the Marvel Age of Image Comics?
Sure, yeah. And Luke Cage was in charge of the Thunderbolts, and they needed somebody who could teleport. And Man-Thing, they decided they put like the Nexus inside this base, and like he could kind of shunt people to where they needed to be. Mm-hmm. So they needed like a magical guide to control the guide or something. It got really convoluted, but kind of fun.
Oh.
They also had like
I just
like
the idea of him talking in different voices.
Yeah, that was really good. And they had Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde in the team as well. So you kind of had this guy who was like a fake British Jack the Ripper. Like as like the weird off center thing to Man Thing, so it's a really good run if you get the chance to read it. Jeff Parker.
All right,
you owe me a Coke.
All right, Man Thing, written by R.L. Stein. Check it out. Again, there's no specific release date. It just says 2017.
Yeah, these are these like advanced solicitations that we as a retailer can do nothing about.
Exactly. All right, so let's move on and let's talk about Fresh Romance. It's the lead title from Rosie Press, an ambitious startup that was promised romance comics for the new generation of comics readers. Unfortunately, founder Janelle Acelin was forced to shut the press down, and it's been picked up by Emmett Comics. And we've talked about Emmett before.
Yeah.
We like Emmett.
Yeah.
Do we like Fresh Romance? Is this a good marriage?
It's a great fit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's totally in line with what they're all about. And Emmett Comics is, you know, female protagonists, written by female creators, and they publish a lot of very good quality content. We like Wendy Project, Xana, and Finding Molly. Those are like some of their top three series that they put out, and I think Fresh Romance fits right in there.
Excellent.
They already have that stuff available digitally if you wanted to check it out, or Oni Press is still publishing the collection of it, which we have in store.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Fresh Romance. Check it out. Emmett Comics.
If you like romance and...
If you like your romance fresh.
You can't get any fresher.
You gotta be fast on the cold.
I know. I was... There's lots of things distracting me in this room.
Yeah, so many genre things.
And so many comics and so many cell phones. So let's move on. All right. Recently... a comic was selected by the U.S. National Book Awards to receive a prize. It's like the U.S. National Book Awards is like the Oscars of the literary world. And March Book 3 recently won it. Now, it's a... I have not written it, but it's a civil rights graphic. I've not written it. I've not read it.
You have not
I'm trying to that talk and
accurate.
Read at the same time. It's a new hobby of mine. It's a civil rights graphic novel. Has anybody read it?
No.
No?
Okay, we're getting copies right now.
Okay. It's kind of big. It's big news, though. I didn't realize that the U.S. National Book Award was the Oscars of books. But there it is. Look at that.
Yep. Senator John Lewis.
That's right.
So it's going over Lewis's.
Well, it's his story,
experience.
Right? It's his experience with the Martin Luther King and
right,
and marching on Washington and things like that. Correct?
Yeah, and it's co-written by Andrew.
So it's his story. Did he write it?
Iden. No, it's co-written by John Lewis.
Okay.
And Andrew.
Andrew
and
Iden.
The art is by Nate Powell.
Okay.
So.
My impression Excellent. Is, I have not read them either, but my impression it was primarily Lewis's biography. Am I incorrect in that? Or is it about
I believe that's
more...
accurate. Okay. I haven't read it. We sell out, like, consistently.
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
And there's a slipcase hardcover that we've been trying to get back in the store forever.
Yep.
And it just came back to print, and I'm sure it'll go out of print the moment it arrives. So this thing, I think it's been in the Amazon top 10 seller lists, like number one for quite some time at some point. And it's been hitting a lot of the end of the year list too. So yes.
All right.
Well, cool. They're beautiful books.
They are. They certainly are. If you and it was book three technically mm-hmm. that got the right. Book award.
Yeah.
Is that the final? Is that the conclusion of the series?
As far as I understand it, it okay. is, but mm-hmm. I could be mistaken on that.
It ends with that.
Yeah.
It ends with this book winning the U.S. National Book Award. Don't know how they knew.
So the first one was published in 2013, second one in 2015, the most recent one I'm assuming is 2016.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
And this next story I want to talk about is, I did not put it on the show sheet because I just saw it the other day, and we talked about Wonder Woman becoming the UN Honorary Ambassador for mm-hmm. For women
mm-hmm.
and girls.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, her reign is coming to an end.
That was fast.
Yes, that decision sparked protest. Now, when it was announced on October 21st that the scantily clad comic book character had been chosen as a figurehead for the feminist campaign, many UN workers protest. Basically, what it boils down to is a lot of people think she's too sexualized mm-hmm. to properly be an honorary mm-hmm. ambassador for the UN. So it's, her reign will come to an end in December 16th. Now, I'm not going to deny that Wonder Woman is scantily clad, but do we think that she's overtly sexual?
No. I just find it funny that that's the problem, not the fact that she's fictional.
There is that.
She can't show up somewhere.
We turned it into a sex thing when it should be a reality thing.
Well, here's a problem with constantly rebooting your characters every 20 minutes because there's never been a consistent vision of who this character is and how she looks and how she presents. You know, if I were to choose a character that a fictional comic book character to assume that role, it would be someone like Kamala Khan or, you know, Faith or, you know, a character that represents like a physicality that's got some class. Wonder Woman has some class, depending on what era you're looking at. Right. And you're talking to people who are not familiar with comic books. So they're going to be looking at considering sort of a homogenized vision or the vision that they know from a crucial period of their time, like, you know,
Linda
Carter in the 70s, sure.
The petition
was a pretty sexy costume.
The petition was started by some concerned UN staff members. It had actually attracted 44,000 supporters, and they wrote, "Although the original creators may have intended Wonder Woman to represent a strong and independent warrior woman with a feminist message, the reality is mm-hmm. that the character's current iteration is that of a large-breasted white woman of impossible proportions, scantily clad in a shimmery, thigh-bearing bodysuit with an American flag motif and knee-high boots, the epitome of a pinup girl." Mm. Is that a narrow view of Wonder Woman, or is that pretty much correct? I don't consider the current DCEU version of Wonder Woman to be a white woman. Gal Gadot is not a white woman, is she?
She's Israeli.
Yeah.
She's Israeli. Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, it's again, it's that narrow vision, because, like, yeah. if they release that statement during the David Finch run, she mm-hmm. probably is bustier. If they yep. release it during the current run, which is, like, Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott drawing her, she's, like, a little bit less accentuated those ways.
Yeah.
If they did it during the Straczynski run, she had pants on. So it's like, okay, fine, whatever.
It wasn't a good plan. It wasn't a
yeah,
good plan.
Yeah, I don't agree with that statement.
No,
I think
I don't
Wonder Woman is an icon of strength and empowerment to a lot of women and men. And
there's nothing wrong with being sexually empowered either.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I don't think that wearing a bathing suit type thing is necessarily, like, automatically wrong. Right. You know, I just don't think that any one extreme of condemning something is a good idea, mm-hmm. but you know, a fictional character is probably not the best thing to pick, like y'all were saying.
Right.
So
it's also not the first time the UN has picked a fictional character to be an honorary ambassador. Red Angry Bird from the Angry Birds, and also
really?
Winnie the Pooh have been honorary ambassadors.
I see
to
Winnie
to promote, like, happiness.
What's with the bird?
I don't remember exactly
Wrong
what
bird.
The bird.
Nicole,
Big Bird got
the bird
stolen.
The word.
Bird.
Oh, good. They'll do that.
All right. No. Anyway. So,
I hate that Family Guy bit.
That's the news this week. Did we get anything wrong? Do you want to talk with us about any of this? Email us at perfectbombpodcast@gmail.com. Let's move on to book report, everybody. And Chris Kasso, my God, I'm freezing. Let's start with you.
Okay. So this is airing before Christmas, so this is good to do it on this episode. I went and reread an old classic I have. I don't know if it's in print anymore, so sorry. It's called Manga Claws, Honor, Loyalty, Tinsel, The Blade of Kringle. And it's by Nathaniel Marunas and artwork by Eric Craddock. It was published by Razorbill, which is actually like a part of Penguin Press. And yeah, it's pretty much Santa Claus was gifted a pair of magical swords early in his life. And then during one busy Christmas, there's a uppity elf who summons a demonic spirit into a toy to sabotage things because he's angry at Santa. And the toy blows up and the demon goes into all the teddy bears in the factory. And the elves get attacked by evil demonic ninja teddy bears. And Santa is fantastic. Fantastic because he's got these extreme close-up with these crazy, like, Ren and Stimpy style eyes, and he just knows something's wrong. And he goes and confronts them all, and with his magical swords, Santa is like this hardcore super soldier killer guy. And
no shirt on,
with no shirt.
Suspenders all the way.
And manly, manly, manly muscles.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to include a picture of this on that website when you get a chance, because I just absolutely love this comic just for the art. It's a pretty quick story, and like most of it's filler just to get you to like this one scene of Santa with the swords. That's fine. That's just totally fine. And it has like a nice message at the end, and that's a great standoff here. So yeah, if you get the chance, if you could find this, check Amazon. I don't know. It's $12.99, and if you just want to see Santa Claus killing a bunch of evil teddy bears, it's great.
Why not? All right, Manga Claus. Thanks, Chris. Cole Hernaday, what about you, sir?
Well, now this is airing before Christmas, is that right?
December 19th.
December 19th, so just a week before Christmas. Well, we've talked about this book several times on the show, on the podcast, but I never have. So what I'd like you to do is step out of the curb with me, because I'm going to take you by the hand, and I'm going to take you back to school on the book Beasts of Burden from Dark Horse Comics. Chris has reviewed a couple of the books a couple of times, but this is what I need you to do. I need you to know how badly this book needs to be on the stand with a greater degree of regularity, because I know you're not reading this book, and I know you're not reading this book because there are not enough of these books in the world. And that's how cool Beasts of Burden is. I did a little bit of research this week because it dawned on me after Chris reviewed the most recent one-shot, which is called Look What the Cat Drug In. I'm like, do I actually have those? And lo and behold, no, I only had but a fraction of them. So I was gathering them all up. I mean, Beasts of Burden is about the Wise Dog Society. There are these dogs. I can't name them all. There's like Ace, Pugs, Red, Whitey, Orphan the Orange Tabby, and eventually we have Nymphna, the Witch's Familiar. And they all protect this little township called Burden from magical evils. It's beautifully illustrated by Jill Thompson and cleverly written by Evan Dorkin. The problem with Beasts of Burden is that there is actually a couple of subplots happening in it. They go all the way back to 2003 when the stories first appeared in an anthology collections from Dark Horse. There was the Dark Horse Book of Hauntings in 2003, Dark Horse Book of Witchcraft 2004, Dark Horse Book of the Dead in 2005. I did my research this weekend, folks. Dark Horse Book of Monsters in 2006. And then there was a mini-series that's collected called Animal Rights that was a four-part mini-series that was done in 2009. I'm not going to burden you with all the other one-shots that came out. But see what I did there? But I truly love this series, and the more I read it, the more I fell in love with the characters, and the more I yearned for seeing more of them on the stand. So here's my request of you. Go out and find the hard copy version of, or the hardbound edition of Beasts of Burden, Animal Rights. It collects... does it not collect all the short stories from the Dark Horse books? And the only miniseries, which was They just call it Beasts of Burden, I think. Yeah. That was from 2009. But there are subplots that are still like sort of living on the periphery of some of these short stories, but we only see the stories once every so many years, like there's from 2010, 2012, 2014, and 2016. That's just not enough opportunity to appreciate this work. And you have a lot of work to do, people. Let's get on it.
A glowing endorsement. So that's a really nice hardbound edition. How much would one of those retail for?
Not much.
$20.
$20.
Reprints the Beast of Burden 1-4, mm-hmm. Stray from Dark Horse Book of Hauntings, mm-hmm. The Unfamiliar from the Book of Witchcraft, mm-hmm. Let Sleeping Dogs Lie from Book of the Dead, mm-hmm. and A Dog and His Boy from Dark Horse Book of Monsters. So.
Oh, and there was also a Beast of Burden Hellboy one-shot in 2010.
Where he carries the pug around.
That's right, yeah. and they're all they're pretty much all-ages stories for the most part.
There's a lot of blood in some of these pages. There's some
sequences in
Ooh,
there.
Ooh, there's...
You know, you've said that in the past, but in rereading them, there's only one or two... Yeah, that is pretty gory, okay.
There's the one with there's the one with the serial killer who kills pets.
That one shatters me a little bit because
there's puppies involved.
But they're not all of that nature.
No. So
there are a couple of grim stories, but...
Yeah.
What do you say?
Maybe teen.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
It's good. Yeah.
So please trot down to Comics Dungeon or go online or visit your friendly neighborhood comic shop where you are and collect those Beast of Burden stories, mm-hmm. and get yourself the more recent Artbound edition. And let's make this happen, people. Please.
Yeah, visit your local comic shop. All right.
I want Dark Horse to see that Jill Thompson is very important, so they could maybe reprint the Magic Trixie if they did that. Maybe they didn't do that. But that was a 3-volume series. I'm pretty sure most of it's out of print now.
Huh. The Magic Trixie?
Mm-hmm.
Was that before Scary Godmother?
I don't know where it falls in line with that, but it's total Halloween Town, cute little pink-haired witch, watercolored. Gorgeous.
That looks exactly like her.
Alrighty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beast of Burden. Thanks, Cole.
You're welcome.
Nicole, what about you?
So not beautiful is Fool Killer, number one. Not something you should run out and get. But it is...
It's not an all-ages book.
It's not an all-ages... It says parental advisory right underneath the number one. So Fool Killer was like... Deadpool, pretty much, right? I mean, I don't know. That's what he seems like to me.
He was
like,
a Steve Gerber character from back in the 70s.
He was just like a murderous guy, and now he's supposedly straight-laced and is like rehabilitating like bad guys. And there's this one guy who's like part of some Nazi group, and like he's sort of stringing him along, like trying to reform him in quotation marks, because he's not really. He's just sort of manipulating him. And Yeah, so the first issue, if you don't know who Fool Killer is, like, I guess you get a pretty good gist of, like, who he is and his backstory and where he comes from. And you almost want to believe, like, he's living this nice life. He's, like, you know, walking his dog. He's got this snazzy yellow blazer. He's got this, like, really hot girlfriend who's just, you know, great in every way. And but then you come to find that he's actually still kind of doing the same stuff and
killing the fools.
Still killing all the fools, exactly.
Without pity. He doesn't pity the fools.
Yeah, I mean, initially it didn't. I feel like it was actually a really strong first issue. I feel like if you were like, I really want to know about this guy, like, it gives you a really good amount of information. It has its own sort of arc within the first issue. But I just didn't feel, like, compelled to want to keep reading. Like, the character itself wasn't necessarily extremely engaging. But I think that's we're at this problem now where if it's good or it's okay, it's just not enough. It has to be really great to be like, I need to read the second issue, you know?
This is kind of a part of Marvel's current thing of, like, okay, we hit it off with Spider-Gwen and all these other characters and
quirky characters,
but also, like, lost characters like Squirrel Girl. And so it's like, let's see what else we can do. And so, like, they did Fool Killer. They've done Solo.
Yeah.
No one should ever do Solo. they did The Prowler. Yeah. There's Slapstick coming out. And it's like, I actually liked Slapstick. But, like, five or six of these all in a row. And it's just like, we don't need that.
A lot of the characters are showing up in the Mercs for Money series, which is actually pretty fun.
That's a better way to do it.
Story arc. Because, yeah, you put them on a team, you get little bits of their personality, and it can be very fitting in a story. This is written by Max Bemis. The penciler is Dalibor Telejic. I don't know if I said that right at all.
Oh, he's good, though.
Jose Marzan Jr. is the inker. It's a pretty solid first issue. I just don't feel, like, compelled to keep reading it.
Right.
But I feel like if you're interested about Fool Killer, if you want to, you know, follow some killer of fools,
if
you
like
should
a slightly less effective Punisher...
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
It's kind of like a more metrosexual kind of Punisher.
But he's a nut. But I mean, he's a nut burger too.
Oh, he's
though.
Yeah, he's so full on like nut burger, like, with cheese.
So
and
he's
extra
Deadpool.
Fries.
He's Deadpool Punisher.
Yeah.
Like,
but he's not as like witty as Deadpool, and he's not as like grim and gritty as Punisher. He's just some sort of like in between.
And this is not the first time they've tried to relaunch Fool Killer.
No, there was a 90s chunk. Yeah. And that's the thing. The character Solo is also like Punisher. It's like they're just kind of like, keep the Punishers coming.
Yeah.
All righty.
Keep up the punishment.
Keep punishing us.
By the Punisher. Okay, thanks, Nicole. And that is Book Report, and that is our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bomb podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And the Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford. We're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Find us online at perfectbombpodcast.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any other RSS reader of your choice. There. Leave us a review if you want, or send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Now, everybody, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions come to us from Chris Late on us. Chris.
Hello. So this one is called It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas. and this is all about alternate Christmas holidays, and if you could guess what they are called. In a galaxy far, far away, this holiday is celebrated with a variety show of extremely questionable content that includes the singing talents of Bea Arthur, Jefferson Starship, and Carrie Fisher. What is this travesty of a holiday known as?
Man. Life Day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apparently, that is available for free to view on archive.org.
Wow.
My Star goodness. Wars Christmas special.
But the thing is that the quality of it is still probably pretty murky because it was recorded from, it's dubbed from someone's VHS tape from 1978.
Oh, yeah. Lucas wanted to destroy all the comics.
That's right.
All right, number two.
The UK Thundercats comics from 1985 introduced this holiday, which while technically celebrates when Third Earth was liberated from Mumra, but it's basically just Christmas in blue and gold. What is it called?
Meowmas. Or Christmas Ho!
Those are kind of better. It's
nice.
It's Ramastide.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
I actually kind of like that.
I like that.
Yes, we got Ramastide. Free of Mumra.
Ramastide to you,
Ramastide
too,
to you, yeah.
All right.
Okay. Nice. In the original pre-crisis continuity of Wonder Woman, the Amazons celebrated winter solstice with a special event. One woman was chosen by lots to play the goddess and distribute presents, while the others are entitled to try and unmask her and take over the goddess role. Those who try and fail are tied up, of course, and have to dress up as deer.
Because Wonder Woman.
Because Marston.
William Marston.
And have to dress up as a deer on the following day for a mock hunt. The deer are caught, cooked, and served, whereupon they have to dance.
I'd like to point out that Chris put cooked in quotation marks.
Yes, for the radio show.
Wow.
What is it called?
I want to say like the Wild Hunt or something like that.
That'd be a good guess.
Yeah?
It's Diana's Day.
That wasn't even close.
Diana's Day.
All right. Happy Diana.
Happy
or is
Diana's
it Mary
Day.
Diana's Day?
Mary Diana's Day. In this popular online game, this holiday is the festive time of year during which players can sample delicious festive treats, playfully toss snowballs, and receive special gifts. Featuring Great Father Winter as an in-game version of Santa Claus, players are sent on various quests involving such adventures as rescuing a stolen reindeer and defeating the abominable Grinch in order to retrieve a lost shipment of goods. And the online game is World of Warcraft. What is this holiday called? Yeah, sorry.
You're the only one who plays
Warcraft. Feast of Winter Vale.
Ah.
And finally,
Feast of Winter Vale.
Yes.
Is there a song? Well, is there a song that goes with it?
There may have been.
Now.
Yeah, there probably will be.
As far as video games, my favorite Christmas DLC is from Borderlands 2. That one was really good. Yes. And I played that during Christmas. It was great.
Finally, on this infamous holiday, children wait for a visit from the Gilded Yak via his flying enchanted canoe. Soiled diapers are hung from mantelpieces in lieu of Christmas stockings, while another tradition calls for the filling of one's uncle's boots with coleslaw. It is hoped that the Gilded Yak, who lives at the West Pole and who appears via the drain of the bathtub, will leave shaving cream scum in the bathroom sink. What is this holiday?
Weasel stomping day?
Yaksmas?
Yak shaving day.
Yak shaving day.
Yaksmas Eve.
Is it from Ren and Stimpy?
It's Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, I knew there was yak in it.
That's why you were right there. I could see it on
your face. I was just going to say that totally sounds like a Ren and Stimpy plot.
It's got to be Ren and Stimpy.
I also have the Ren and Stimpy holiday special CD, the musical CD where they have the Yak shaving day song, which includes Richard Nixon randomly in it.
And everyone is extremely ecstatic, right?
Yes, extremely ecstatic.
Extreme.
Oh, veins are popping.
Is there like a little bouncy ball so you could sing along to? Yeah, I remember that.
All right, well,
veins are popping.
Merry Yaksmas or whatever it was called to all of you.
Happy Diana's Day.
Happy Diana's Day.
Oh, I like your skirt.
And to all a good night. We'll see you next week.
Happy Ramastide.